Welcome to Start With This, a podcast featuring Night Vale creators Joseph Fink and me, Jeffrey Craner. Each episode, we discuss a topic and then give you two assignments, something to consume and something to create. Start With This, exaggeration.
Art is hard. Starting is hard. If you want to start somewhere, you can start with this. You can start with this.
The truth is boring. I mean, in your real life, it's not. You had a lovely bike ride. Your fantasy football team did great. Your cousin had a new baby, and like all babies, it's very cute. A dog saw you and wagged its tail. These are all very exciting things for you. But in order to make them a good story, they require some gussying up. All storytelling is exaggeration. That's not to say all stories are lies, only that language is not the same thing as experience. Language is a technique we've developed for recording and sharing experiences. In the same way, a recipe is not food. We want our stories to be based in truth, but we also want them to be instructive, interesting, and evocative. So that lovely bike ride you had? The morning sun crested the top of the mountain, creating a golden halo above the trees, which had just begun to reveal their autumnal beauty. You ran into an old friend who told you something that may change your life forever. You saw a bear on the bike trail, and the bear was playing a guitar. Your levels of exaggeration may vary. But if that bear thing did happen, please write that down. I would like to know more about this bear. Hi, I'm Jeffrey Craner, here with Joseph Fink. Hi, Joseph.
Hello there. That bear story sounds fun.
I would like for that bear story to be true, but I would like that bear story to be very interesting. I'm less interested in that bear if it's playing like John Mayer tunes, but if it had some Leonard Cohen in it.
Okay. I mean, if you're going to be picky about the bear's musical taste when it's playing a guitar with paws, that's fine.
I have very heightened expectations for any music that a bear is going to play. When writing down some points about exaggeration, I kind of started with this notion of exaggeration in comedy, the idea of blowing things up in terms of satire. We've talked about satire on this show before, but I realized in writing it down, what I always circle back to in thinking about satire or farce or absurdity, even in horror, that there is an exaggeration that always circles back to the fact that all stories are exaggerated. I remember years ago when the movie Seabiscuit came out, watching the trailers, I just thought, that looks boring. And I think I said that out loud and somebody responded, but it's a true story. And I thought, that doesn't make it good, though. And Seabiscuit may have been good. I never saw it. Maybe it's a terrific film. If you loved it, that's awesome. I'm not shitting on Seabiscuit here. But the notion that something being true makes it worthwhile to make into a film seems absurd to me. That I'm really interested in something being good and compelling, and just saying, here's a horse that won a race, and I know it was an underdog, but the underdog is a very old story. How do you accentuate and exaggerate, maybe not lie, but make something really good? And that's what exaggeration came back to for me, was the very notion of telling a story is exaggerating an experience you had.
Yeah, I mean, that idea that Seabiscuit was interesting because it happened reminds me of, it's sort of the concept that there's like certain people who are like, well, I don't read fiction because, you know, I prefer to learn true things. And I mean, a couple things there, like there's truths that can only be expressed in fiction because fiction is not, it's not completely untethered from the human experience. Fiction is an expression of the human experience in a way that is you're not getting from a history book. It's not an instead of, it's complementary too, but also that's putting a lot of faith in the accuracy of the nonfiction you're reading. As you said, all stories are exaggerations. And I think we discussed this before. I don't remember whether this was in a private conversation or on the show, but the musical Hamilton, the discussion of its historical accuracy and the kind of point I came to, which is the whole focus of Hamilton is not what happened. It's not what is the history. The point of Hamilton is the question of history is who's telling the story. It's not what happened. It's who's telling that. Because when you know who's telling it, then you get a better sense of the exaggerations that are happening.
I always find achieving some level of verisimilitude in art is interesting. Like, if somebody can create a very realistic painting that looks almost photographic, I find that really cool. I think that's such a neat accomplishment. I'm just in awe of people who have that talent. Or to even create a novel or a TV show or a film that feels so real, feels so honest. I've seen works of theater wherein they've taken transcripts from actual depositions. I can't remember if it's deposition or trials. And then they just reenacted them on stage. They're using the actual words, but everything is heightened because now you're acting it out. You're performing it in a certain way. Going back to just satire, I thought about the simplest form of satire, which is the caricature or the political cartoon. And exaggeration on its surface sounds like something that you're making things bigger. But visually, when you see a caricature, they may make the ears bigger and then the eyes smaller or the teeth larger or and then shrink the body. So it's all about the exaggeration of just focusing on certain things that get to maybe truth, maybe untruth about what that person looks like. I sort of hate caricatures because I think it's people fixating too much on looks. And ultimately, anytime somebody reflects my looks back to me and how they see me, I always feel a little bit defensive. So maybe not the most positive example, but I think a very solid example in storytelling of how we blow certain things up and shrink certain things back down. That's what we're doing. If I were to watch highlights of a basketball game, they're going to narrow it down to the key moments of that basketball game in order to tell the story of the drama of the game. What was the tension back and forth? They're not going to give you all of these long moments of like, oh, the coach called 3 timeouts in a row after fouls. And then the game, you know, the game slowed down and there were several commercial breaks. That's just the tedium of something happening in live, real life.
Yeah, I mean, with exaggeration, a lot of it is just thinking about, is this useful exaggeration? Does this exaggeration reveal something new? I think about the political cartoonist Eli Valley, who is a Jewish political cartoonist who's become kind of popular on Twitter. And a lot of what he does is he does these horribly grotesque caricatures of politicians, just these like almost Lovecraftian takes on every fold of their skin. But then almost always the dialogue he puts in these things are word for word quotes from the politicians. And so he uses exaggeration to kind of place into the proper monstrous context the polite words that these people are saying, kind of taking their words and showing that for the horror story it actually is. And so the exaggeration there is serving a useful purpose, while the direct quotes are what is keeping it grounded to the reality.
Thinking about horror, watching a lot of horror films recently, it's not even a horror. This could be in an action film or a mystery or suspense thriller type of thing, but there's a lot of moments wherein the killer has a chance to kill our protagonist or the character in the scene, but they do it slowly, that they're creeping around the corner. There's something about the goal here no longer becomes, I'm just interested in the death of this other person. The goal here becomes the storyteller trying to draw out the tension of a scene, of slowly creeping in on somebody with a knife, or the classic trope of the James Bond villain tying Bond to the death machine and then explaining their whole MO and how they did it and how they were going to get away with it and then walking out of the room in order for James Bond to be able to get out of the mess that he's in. But these are ways in which we exaggerate to create that excitement, to create that drama. These characters, these killers, aren't behaving in any rational way. If you really just wanted to be done with James Bond, like, you would find much less Rube Goldbergian ways to get rid of him. It doesn't seem that hard. Once you have him tied to a chair, you could easily just take a gun right to him. But that's less interesting, and you don't want to kill off your main character, so you build up ridiculous amounts of suspense in a world in sort of an unreal logic.
And horror itself is a genre that is built on exaggeration. The whole concept of horror, for the most part, is taking fears we have in our life and blowing them up to the most ridiculous extreme. You know, we kind of, I think, especially at the time it was coming out, we had this fear that television was kind of destroying our society and was bad for us. But The Ring posited that maybe televisions would cause a ghost girl to crawl out and kill us. Like, it's taking a fear that exists and blowing that up. And that's almost every horror movie, even the very subtle ones, is built on this idea of, you know, some of them are very, you know, specific. It's a fear of spiders. It's a fear of falling. And you blow that up. But and some of it is just sort of, you know, broader existential dread or anxiety and blowing that up. But almost always horror is starting with a mundane fear that we have in our mundane lives and turning it into something big and exciting and supernatural. So which gets to actually one of the useful things about exaggeration is by blowing it up to this ridiculous extreme, it allows us to look at that fear from a distance. Some of these fears are ones that we wouldn't want to think about too hard if it was very realistically portrayed and realistically talked about. But if it's turned into something big and fun with like a goofy costume and fun music, then we can kind of stop and think about, why am I afraid of death? Without having to really dive into like a depressing thing, because in this case, death is personified by a guy in a silly mask running around with a knife.
Yeah, it's way more fun to have the action here. It's way more interesting to have some type of back and forth, some type of volley here between our antagonist and our protagonist, or, you know, the force of good, force of evil, however you want to frame that. And if we get to the heart of like what a phobia is, what an irrational fear is, you and I have both talked before about dealing with fear of flying. And when you start really confronting it, you realize that some of it is deeply psychological. Some of it is, you know, based in your past. Some of it is just the practicality of how uncomfortable plane travel can be, that heightens these notions. And as you start breaking it down, it becomes a thing you can kind of eradicate from your life. You and I think both kind of eradicated our fear of flying just through repetition. And also a little bit of, we started flying a lot more for touring Night Vale. And so we found ourselves suddenly on planes all the time with our closest friends. So it's a very different experience than if you had to fly by yourself all the time for a job you didn't like. But, you know, we found ways in which to eradicate it. Well, that's super nice for us, really good times, but it's not a compelling horror story to talk about how you deconstruct a phobia and how you eradicate it. In fact, in storytelling, it's less about rationalizing things for your characters. I mean, a character has to use rationale to solve a mystery, to come to terms with the lover that they've scorned or something like that. But you have to dole that out over time, right? Like, so for instance, in a romance, you may in your life have hit it off with somebody right away. And then from that moment on, you and this other person just start seeing each other all the time. You laugh together. You both mesh really well. And one day you get married and you have kids and your life is pretty solid. That's great. That's a really great life that you just piece together. It's a super uncompelling story until you create some conflict in there. So exaggerating how people behave in relationships is really important. I have this sort of thing I always tell myself, which is in real life, you should communicate with your partner. You should communicate your needs and understand their needs and listen to them and be willing to have a give and take at all times. But if you're writing to a couple in your story, they should never do that. They should, if the couple is the central part of your story, they should somehow keep things from each other or fail to communicate exactly what it is they want, because it's those failures in communication that is going to create the tension that makes the story more interesting.
Yeah, and that also leads to this thing of certain exaggerations have become very common. And so you can get a lot of mileage out of kind of subverting them, you know, something like that. Like if you have a fictional couple and you get them to a point where in a story they would not communicate and they'd fight, it might be interesting to have them communicate in a healthy way. In the same way as if you have a point where your villain has your hero captured and is ready to do the standard, you know, slowly have the laser beam go at them while they explain their entire plan. If instead the villain just immediately shoots your main character and walks out without a word, that can be a very effective moment, because there's certain exaggerations I think we've gotten so used to that it can be kind of its own form of attention getting to really play that exaggerated moment down or against type.
I think about exaggeration going hand in hand with pacing, that you can't really run your whole novel or your whole podcast or your whole short story or whatever. You can't turn it all the way to 11 for the whole time. I didn't see Uncut Gems, but I hear that there is definitely like an extreme tension throughout this movie. But I would imagine that even still, you still have to have moments of pulling back. And exaggeration for me becomes about not just finding the right thing to exaggerate, the right thing to make bigger. Maybe it's not just about this tiny little object that is the source of everyone's attention. Maybe it's not just Desdemona's handkerchief, but it's also the exaggeration has to do with where you place it and how long you spend in that. You know, think about just normal conversation, hanging out with friends and chatting and telling stories. You can only dominate the conversation so long with big, boisterous tales of old or really big, funny, hilarious things. You do have to bring it back down. So pacing is really important to know when to blow things up and when to pull things back. So in exaggeration, I was thinking about, like, so for example, when we write Welcome to Night Vale, we use exaggeration a lot in humor and horror. So the exaggeration of Night Vale from its start was the idea that you have a town where every conspiracy theory is true. So what you've done is you've taken this sort of inverted exaggeration where you take really evil, really invasive government forces and you make them so commonplace as to just be just kind of a normal background part of everyday life. You're just not that interested in it. But because you live there, like if you live in New York City, you really stop noticing the Empire State Building after a while. If you live in Paris, you stop noticing the Eiffel Tower after a while, in the same way that the people of Night Vale stop noticing the government conspiracies and things like that as anything out of the ordinary. And so with the exaggeration of Night Vale, we pump it up to where the absurd things, the really difficult things, actually often tend to be fairly mundane. Sometimes for like comedy and horror effects, we did an episode called Street Cleaning Day, wherein it turns out that the street cleaners are pretty terrifying, violent ordeal that everyone kind of has to hide from. But also by taking all of the large stresses of everyday life, like living within a giant government conspiracy and reducing all of that, you can really exaggerate and focus on the details of day-to-day life of Cecil and Carlos's personal life together, their family life, Cecil's niece Janice, their relationship to the community in general, and bring those out. So exaggeration doesn't always have to just be for hilarity or scares. It can also be used to really, really focus in on that. So in a world where every government conspiracy theory is true in Night Vale, by suppressing that, the listener notices that. They notice how absurd it is to downplay government conspiracy and then to elevate the story of my teenage niece and her high school basketball team.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that. Our kind of unwritten mission statement on Night Vale is that the weird is normal, and the normal is terrifying. And each of those are their own form of exaggeration. By taking these obviously weird or creepy things and really downplaying them, that is an exaggeration. And then by taking something like brushing your teeth and really zooming in on it and really trying to make it as alien feeling and divorced from our reality as possible, that's another form of exaggeration. And they kind of, even though they're going in opposite directions, they work together.
I want to just talk about, I just wrote down a couple of techniques that I'm sort of fascinated with in my own writing for exaggeration. I mean, listen, there are infinite techniques for how to write stories and how to exaggerate. And we are sort of talking here about just the element of storytelling in general is one of the core elements is exaggeration. But these are just a couple of techniques that I've used over time that I think are really interesting. And one is just expounding on something that may be important. For instance, if your villain is obsessed with knives, let's say your villain likes knives, they use knives, go with that. Drive into that. Give your villain a deep knowledge of all kinds of knives. They're always talking about knives. They know the history of knives. They know all of the different ways in which you sharpen a knife and the different metals you use in knives and the different hilts and makes and models of different types of knives, all the way down to just like butter knives. Like, they're just obsessed with their butter knives, not even knives for killing, but knives for just spreading jam on toast. They have a knife collection. Maybe it's almost like a mini museum of knives. Like, the exaggeration there, it becomes a way in which you flesh out a character. It becomes a way in which you add something unique and interesting to this character that, you know, plot-wise is not that important. The fact that they kill – you could say all of that with, this person really likes knives. They always kill people with knives. That may be very true about your character, and you may just want to get to that point. But I think sometimes exploring and building out just how much they are into this one specific weapon can be so much more compelling.
Yeah, I mean, you think about like the John Wick movies, which at their heart are pretty standard action movies of like guy, you know, fights mobsters and beats up and shoots them a bunch. But it's captured a lot of fans that maybe wouldn't be interested in those kind of movies just because every single possible part of that story is exaggerated. So it's not just that, you know, he has like a safe house. It's that there's a secret hotel just for killers that's like run with this ornate code. And it's not that, you know, they owe each other favors, he and the other hired killers. It's that they pay for everything with giant golden coins that are only for hired killers. And you like, can use it for favorite, like every aspect. It's not that you put a hit out for someone, it's that it has to go to this office full of all rockabilly women with full sleeve tattoos that use old-fashioned like office machines to put out. Like, every single detail in that story is exaggerated to this bizarre degree, and so it turns what could have been a standard action movie into this like very surrealist fun universe.
Another technique I like using, and if you have any, Joseph, feel free to add those in too. But another technique I like using is slow motion. So what I mean by this is just to take your time when something happens. I'm not even talking about something important, meaning maybe it's key to the plot. Maybe it's key to the listener or reader's understanding of your story. Or maybe it's just there for pacing, right? Sometimes slowing things down is important to the pacing. But for example, I read a book recently that I enjoyed. It was fine. I won't list it here because I think it's a first novel from this writer. But there's a moment where a character gets killed, and they get killed in a pretty violent way. And I didn't realize it until about two pages after it happened that the person died in this very violent way, because then a reference is made to, meanwhile, this person's exploded body is across the floor. And I thought, oh, I missed the fact that this person had exploded. And I went back, and it is said so briefly and so matter-of-factly in the middle of a paragraph of like, so-and-so kills this character. And I thought, that's what a weird failure to really give the impact of this moment of what that means. Because as a reader, if a character explodes, I would very much like to know when that happens. And just by seeing a character explodes, the author was very clear with me that the character exploded, but it happens in such a short, brief time that it feels maybe metaphoric. It feels like something you can gloss over. I think I also might have been speed reading a little bit, so I moved past it too quickly. So maybe it's a little bit on my fault. But what I mean by slow motion is, take time to break down the action of what just happened. To really, it's okay to spell it out carefully for somebody. If you are a sports fan like me, it's not enough just to see a big dunk and a big moment. It's really great to watch all the different angles and the slowdown of the replay to see exactly how everything transpired, to show how the defense broke down, how the offense made a thing happen. That's one of the things that's really compelling about sports. And I think in storytelling in general, slowing down and taking time to describe your action. And it's not just the action, it can also just be the other character's reaction to it. You could say, and then he exploded. That's a very terse sentence that gets right to the point. But you could also have the narrator or the characters around it react to what just happened in the room. That's a pretty violent action that was kind of out of nowhere for this book, that you would want to spend some time, a little bit of time, exploring how everybody is reacting to it.
That makes me think we should do an entire episode just on paragraph breaks and how to use them, because there's definitely like a sense of, you know, because your readers will sometimes skim paragraphs. And so if you bury something in the middle of a paragraph, it might get missed. And there's definitely an art to like, where do you put a paragraph break? What goes at the start of a paragraph? What goes at the end? We should talk about that. But getting to this subject, kind of the opposite of slow motion can also be super interesting, of like speeding things up to this exaggerated degree. I don't have a specific example of this, but say you have a couple and it's like there's kind of been an will they, won't they, and then they finally kiss. And then the very next sentence is 10 years later, she would leave crying, knowing that she would never be back. 2 years after that, he would be dead, a car crash, not his fault. Like, just something about how fast that happens can have its own devastating impact. So that's another thing you can do, is take something that feels like it should be slow and really speed it up.
Oh, I think that's a really great example. The last thing I wrote down here was accentuating details. This is a pacing thing for me, but I'm always interested in, if done poetically, not superfluously, and it's hard to know the difference there, but say like you have a character as a plumber who's working on leaking pipes. But it's always interesting when a person just notices things around them. So not just noticing things that are practical to the plumber needing to fix these pipes. It's, or actually, here's a better example. Let's take something very high stakes. Let's say it's a bomb disarming unit. So it's very important to clip the colored wires in the correct order at the correct time before the timer runs out. But what if they just sort of notice this really intricate spider's web in the corner? Like, being able to take some moment out of the scene. The exaggeration to me there is the, you know, you could play with it as part of the character's inability to focus. You could play with it a little bit poetically to talk thematically about all of the things that have to work right in order to disarm a bomb or even to make a bomb, as that connects to engineering-wise, how structurally sound a spider's web has to be in order to do the job that it does. Or just a moment of beauty, right? Just in this moment of pure tension, to take the reader totally out of it and just give them a moment of peace and calm before potential chaos ensues. But I think accentuating details is always a really interesting way of changing the pace on people, of like just diving down into something that seems unimportant and just bringing it up to the surface for a little bit.
There's definitely writers who I love because they do what you could call like poetic runs. Like, you know, you could say, hey, it was a stormy day at sea. Or you could do a page and a half of just do a poetic run on the ocean and the storms and the movement on the storms and the ships that were at sea that day. And those are both valid ways of storytelling. But if you're able to do it, sometimes those poetic runs, you know, it's Thomas Pynchon is somebody who I bring up a lot, who so much of what I love about him is it's almost like, you know, it's almost like what people get out of jazz music, of it's not the core melody that's the important thing. It's when he goes on this run or variation on it for a while. And then, yes, it's maybe not as narratively cohesive as if he had just said something very simply, but it has this beauty and this weight that it gains to it. The details thing also reminds me of reading Hearts in Atlantis as like a teenager. And I think on like this is literally like the first or second page, so I'm not giving anything away. But I remember there's this thing about this kid and his father is dead. And Stephen King is like, talks about his father was a real estate agent. And he died of a heart attack on the floor of a model home while a prospective buyer tried to call the ambulance on a phone that wasn't connected to anything. And I remembered being stunned. It was like seeing someone do a magic trick, because I just didn't understand how you could come up with a detail that interesting. There was something so fascinating about that detail. And it took me years, I think, before I was able to do that myself, of just finding that moment, like, the only thing that mattered for the story is that his father was dead. Nothing else about that mattered, but finding that detail of how his father died that felt so both real but also exaggerated in a way that seemed interesting was, it stunned me when I read it as a teenager.
It's such an example of a writer fully understanding not just what happens in their story, but understanding the underlying feeling of what happened. The helplessness and the hopelessness of his father's death there, he found a way of this accentuated detail of this telephone in a model home that's not hooked to anything. That's an actual detail that would be in a model home, is a telephone not hooked to anything. If he just concentrated on that detail without a death being involved, with nothing else interesting happening, that's just a small detail that's not, may or may not be that interesting to the reader. But the helplessness of the idea of trying to call the police, trying to call an ambulance to come help this dying man, and it not being hooked to anything, and then the irony of it being tied back into his exact job and his life, his livelihood, this man's livelihood, creates irony and hopelessness. And I think it's Stephen King fully understanding just how inevitable that death is, in a really horrible, horrible way. It's very evocative. I wanted to mention just a couple things before we get to your assignments, which is just a couple of little tidbits and reminders, which is, by exaggeration, it's sort of repeat from earlier, which is, this is different than superlative. We're not just talking about making something the best or the worst or the goodest or the evilest of all time. It really is just about bringing out details, taking time to accentuate something or making something seem a bigger deal than it is. And part of this is creating some level of unreality. Your characters are always going to behave in a way that you would not. They're going to behave in ways that real people do not. And it's difficult to do that where you don't throw the reader completely out of your story, to where they're just like, I just don't buy that, that a person would do that. So it's just remembering that no matter how exaggerated something is, we're not talking about lies and, you know, we're not talking about truth and lies as it relates to fact and fiction. We're talking about truth and lies as they relate to just the underlying core of humanity. Are you being truthful to humanity? Are you really telling a capital T truth about this character's existence? And if you are, and if you're treating them like an actual human being, no matter how evil their intents are, I think you will have a believable story, no matter how exaggerated their behavior is. And then one other thing is, you know, if you're going to use, non-realistic elements of, you know, things like magic or sci-fi elements, things like that, like we said in our exposition episode, the earlier you set this up, the easier it is for people to believe that. Like, you can't at the end of Die Hard have John McClane suddenly use magic against the terrorists. You can't have Gandalf just take out a rifle and start shooting orcs, because we've established that Gandalf probably doesn't use rifles. Yeah, it's just, if Darth Vader just suddenly decides to retire from whatever his main job is to spend more time with his estranged son late in Return of the Jedi, like, that's just not where that movie is going. Like, that makes no sense to his super evil character without developing something else that builds toward that.
This is not 100% related to exaggeration. Maybe we should have an episode about this, but the Darth Vader example makes me think about the idea that everything in your story, even the surprising elements, and maybe most especially the surprising elements, should in retrospect feel inevitable. It should feel like this is the way it happened and this is the way it had to happen. I feel like the best stories do that, where even the parts you didn't expect or didn't see coming, this isn't to say it should be predictable, but in retrospect, it should feel like, well, of course, it had to happen that way.
I will add one more note to that, because I think just Darth Vader is just a rich topic in general. But Sarah Marshall of the You're Wrong About podcast mentioned that in all storytelling, the bad guy always thinks they're doing good. Like, in general, your bad guy, your antagonist, almost always thinks they're doing something good for the world. And she said that, which made Darth Vader and the whole Empire thing seem ridiculous. Like, why did they call it the Death Star? Like, a true evil empire would have called it the Hope Star. They would have framed it like they were doing something great for the universe. They would have never referred to themselves as an evil empire or the Death Star. It would have been called the Help the Children Star. So let's get to your assignments. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hello, Joseph here. I have two books coming out this year. Seriously, May 11th, 2021,
the first 10 years, two sides of the same love story. So there is a love story that happened behind the scenes of Welcome to Night Vale between me and Meg Bashwinner, MC and tour manager for the live Night Vale show. In this memoir, we recount the first 10 years of our relationship, year by year, without consulting each other beforehand. It's a funny and romantic story about how differently we experience and remember our lives. Then on July 20th, 2021, The Halloween Moon, my first ever novel for ages 10 and up. Esther Gold loves Halloween, until the year that Halloween night just won't end. Even she doesn't want Halloween to last forever. No matter your age, if you are a fan of what I do, I think you're going to love this book. Get these books wherever you get your books.
And we're back. Let's get to your assignments. I'll start you off with your assignment to consume. This episode's consume assignment is a podcast by our friend and great podcaster, Dylan Marin. It is called Small Triumph, Big Speech. In each episode, Dylan asks a different listener to tell him something small they have accomplished. Maybe they made a cucumber salad, or they finished reading a book they have been reading for a while, or they finally answered that email that they had avoided answering for a bit. And then he has another guest come in and write and perform a congratulatory speech in the style of like a graduation speech, complete with swelling orchestral music. And the result is very funny and very sweet, because it takes this small triumph and it celebrates it to the level that it feels sometimes in our life, these small triumphs. The podcast creates a positive, uplifting feeling. It doesn't quite match the banality of these small accomplishments, but it matches maybe the way those accomplishments can feel. These triumphs become dramatic and compelling, filtered through that fully produced speech. And in talking about useful exaggeration, I think by celebrating these things that don't from the outside look like much, but maybe to ourselves can feel like a lot, it sort of makes that connection to people. You know, yes, finishing this book was nothing, but it felt good for me. That small triumph, big speech.
So for your create assignment, we're going to do something kind of similar to the consume assignment here. I want you to write about a 200-word story about something mundane you did today. Maybe you made toast, or you brushed your teeth, or you exercised for 30 minutes, whatever it is. Just pick a mundane thing you did today and write that story, but exaggerate the details of it. How did your toast change your day, your life, the world even? What kind of butter or jam or anything did you put on the toast? Did you make a cinnamon toast? Did you use a toaster? Did you use a toaster oven? These little mundane details, try to expand upon them to find some significant meaning. Maybe it connects back to some moment earlier in your life that you find relevance in and can bring that relevance to today, something that can potentially change you, if not now, maybe shortly thereafter upon doing this mundane task. Put dramatic significance into that workout you had, or whatever it is that your mundane thing is. Like, did you train for something? Did you have a new revelation about your own body in doing this? Raise the stakes beyond just making a breakfast snack or personal health. Maybe you have saved all of the universe. Maybe you have done something truly significant for all of mankind and for the future of humanity in general. Or maybe you can just elevate that to some feeling or change in yourself you had through this. It's okay to lie about the facts a little bit. The important thing is to remember the truth of your own humanity. Thank you all so much for joining us. That's all for this episode, but your assignment is just beginning. Head on over to startwiththispodcast.com to join our membership community. Becoming a member allows you to share your assignments with other listeners, talk about what's sparking your creativity, and find future collaborators. Plus, you'll be able to ask follow-up questions about this and future episodes, and gain exclusive access to episodes where we answer those questions. Membership is just $5, which is 1/500th of a 1990 Ford Tempo in fair condition. We can't wait to see what you're working on. Start With This is a production of Night Vale Presents. It's produced by me, Jeffrey Craner, editing by Grant Stewart, mixing by Vincent Cascione, theme song by Joseph Fink. All other music is by Caged Animals. Find more at cagedanimals.net. Check out nightvalepresents.com for more information about this show and all of our other shows. Thanks for listening. Joseph, we always like to end with an inspirational quote about writing from a great writer. I think you know this quote by the poet Maya Angelou. Maya Angelou once said, "There is no greater agony than..."
Sure, okay, yeah. "There is no greater agony than stubbing your toe." Ugh, damn it, ugh, hate it, ugh, ugh. And I agree with her.
Perfect.
Hi, I'm Jeffrey Craner, and I wanted to tell you about one of my other podcasts, Random Number Generator Horror Podcast Number 9. So the thing is, my friend Cecil Baldwin, the voice of Night Vale, loves horror movies, and he's helping make the genre more approachable for me, and hopefully for you too, one film at a time in a random order. Are you squeamish about horror movies? Look, I get it, and no worries. Just listen in and we'll tell you everything that happens. But do you love horror movies? Well, that's great too. Watch along with us each week. We've got nearly 200 episodes covering everything from The Shining to Leprechaun 4 in Space. I'm serious, we go in a random order. So check out Random Horror 9 wherever you get podcasts. From